I'm gonna continue to play with Z, so I'm not too worried about, you know, throwing out my pleasantries and compliments now. I'll be able to tell him at the end of the year.
I totally get. I actually do wonder if Miles has the power to go to management and say, "Hey, heard you want a fourth rounder for Za'Darius Smith. Don't do that." I would imagine. I mean, I think given the way the Browns organization sets up a lot of things, I would imagine Miles Garrett has more power in the locker room than you or I might realize. And also, by the way, that helps that there's no quarterback with any sort of power anymore, because we've seen how things have gone. And I think Deshaun at this point is probably pretty... I don't even think Deshaun would be interested in wielding power, even if he did have it. And that's probably a recent change. But I think that's an interesting answer. We're gonna get more into that answer late in the 3 o'clock hour. And we do have plenty to get into in this hour. I just want to play it because Keith came in the break and said, hey, this is what Miles just said. And it sounds every bit like what Keith described. I think Za'Darius is going to go if they can get a fourth rounder for him. But that's just me. We also have to talk about other fake trades that people want to come up with. But the question that we got into, or the question I threw out there, was, do you love Jameis, or do you love that Jameis isn't Deshaun? Because granted, this is kind of like the question of what made the bigger impact on Sunday, quarterback play or the play calling? You're going to have an obvious answer. You're going to like Jameis because he threw for 300 yards, right? If Jameis had come out and threw for 175 yards, you lost to the Ravens, we're probably not exalting him at this point in the week thus far, this point in the season. Kayla?
It's so reminiscent of last year with Joe Flacco that I'm worried that we're going to be making the same exact mistake where we go all in on Jameis right away, right at the very beginning. Everybody falls in love with him because he's not Deshaun, just like we did with Flacco. Flacco left at the end of the year.
Well, remember.
And he dropped the ball during the playoff game.
Okay, easy there. But that's like three takes right in a row there. Let me react to one for the love of God. I don't hate it, by the way. I'm proud of you for having your sports takes. We've talked about this.
I'm learning.
Look at that. Now, to get back to the idea of the Flacco-Jameis stuff. One, just to kind of correct Kayla just for a second there, got a little mansplain right now. Kidding. The Browns could have had Joe Flacco back here if they wanted to. And whether it was this veiled notion that Joe Flacco was a threat to Deshaun, apparently every quarterback's a threat to Deshaun. No more so than Deshaun himself. But they could have had him back. And so it's not necessarily he left. He was allowed to leave. And I think that brings the interesting thing with Jameis, because I think the biggest thing at the end of the season, let's say that Jameis kind of walks the line that Joe did for most of those, seven games last year, which was, it's kind of a death-defying act, which is he's going to throw for a lot of yards. He is going to throw for a couple touchdowns. He's also probably going to turn the ball over. And as long as he kept him within two turnovers, that was justifiable for the Browns. When it got to the playoffs, he still kept the turnovers, I wouldn't say to a minimum, but he kept them within the similar range. The problem is they were pick sixes. And those boo-boos hurt more than just random INT or fumble boo-boos. Now, I think the biggest difference and the biggest test for the Browns is going to be the off-the-field stuff with Jameis. And no, I'm not going to take another shot at crab legs or the Uber stuff, or any, because that to me, like, at some point, there should be some level of statute of limitations. And I know this is a little heavy-handed, because some of the stuff Jameis was accused of was much more serious than some of the other stuff. And so there's going to be some natural reactions to some of the more serious stuff that Jameis was accused of and sued for. But by and large, with Jameis, the stuff that I have said a couple times this week, that I just wonder how it plays on any given week, is the pregame speeches. It is the press conferences. It is the verbose, weird, goofy kind of stuff. And by the way, if you're not following Jameis on TikTok, this is a free promotion. It's mesmerizing. I don't know if it's good. I don't know if it's bad. It's kind of like my TikTok, at Nick Wilson Says It. Just give it a follow if you want to. Nick Talk. But I have one right now with 6 views. That was insulting. But I do think, like, I think it's so easy when quarterbacks win to just everything they do is, you know, they're Midas. Everything they do turns to gold. I'm really curious, and I promise you I'm not leading on this. I don't know how this town will react if the differential changes. If whether it's you're not winning as much, right? If maybe Sunday's the real time where, okay, he played well and you won, right? Like, if, okay, all of a sudden the numbers still look good, but you lose to the Chargers. Or the numbers look bad and you beat the Chargers. Or the numbers look bad and you lose to the Chargers. Play that out over the final 9 games of the season. Math is so hard. 8. It's 8 after this Chargers game. But the reason why I say I don't know is I think it's easy to overlook things that otherwise might be annoying. Because the one thing I'll say about Jameis as a human being, he's pretty consistent. And that's actually like a testament to him. Like, that might fly in the face of, I don't know how real the pregame speeches are or whether they're performative. I don't know how real the press conferences are or how performative they are. Sometimes they do feel performative. When he was on with us, and I want to continue to call back to this. When he joined us in March, it didn't feel performative. It felt playful. It felt, you know, it felt that he was a little off the cuff, but in a good way. There was a lot of real there, it felt like. I don't get the sense of that every single time that I see Jameis in some context or another. But again, that's a personal touch thing. That's a personal taste thing, rather. But I do think that Jameis is consistent in that he is who he is, whether it's performative, real, whether it feels performative or real or not. But man, I think it's going to be really interesting these next 2 or 3 weeks. Because I don't think he, all due respect to Kevin Stefanski, I don't think he has the rest of the season. I think it's really important that Jameis looks good on Sunday. And I'm talking about, you know, okay, you can throw 2 picks. You can't throw the Kyle Hamilton pick. You can't throw the pick that loses you the game. Now, fortunately, Kyle Hamilton dropped the damn thing, and what was it, 2 throws later? There was a Cedric Tillman over the top into the end zone game winner. And listen, I do think what that game meant to Browns fans probably buys you a little bit of time. That was a really special game because it wasn't just about beating. Okay, 1, it wasn't just winning. 2, it wasn't just beating Baltimore. 3, we had the emotions riding high of losing Jim Donovan and all the great feelings that that brought out. All the great emotions, and then being able to see Kevin and Andrew take the game ball to his wife and his daughter. Like, those were great things. But I think it's really important Jameis plays well on Sunday. And playing well is not just, well, don't throw any interceptions. That's the obvious thing to say. This is the one way that I think it's like Flacco. 1, they perfectly fit this system that Kevin Stefanski was winning with every other quarterback not named Jameis Winston for the previous 3 or 4 years. But 2, it is, all right, your limit is 2 turnovers. But now you need to go ahead and make up for that with 2, 3, 4 touchdowns. Or with a bunch of sustained drives that lead to points one way or another. And if that doesn't happen, I'm not saying this is going to be the immediate turn on Jameis. But I think it starts the clock. Both within that organization and with fans about whether or not all of Jameis starts to weigh on you or starts to maybe try your nerves a little bit more, try your patience a little bit more. Because with Joe, this is where Joe Flacco and Jameis are 2 very different people. Joe was quiet, soft-spoken, and there was no motivational speeches. He kind of was just a direct but respectful talking Northeast guy who really never stepped in any direction. He just played it safe because that's who Joe is. Who you saw randomly pop up at every Dunkin' in Northeast Ohio.
I'm a guy with a beard.
There was a Gets Us with Joe because he just kind of didn't say anything, and he just kind of shut up and he was quiet. Like I, everybody always talks about the prototypical NFL quarterback, right? Which physically has changed about 12 times over since I was like 10 years old, right? And you know, you look at it now, like maybe Shedeur Sanders is more the prototypical quarterback than like a Drew Aller. I don't know. I tend to think Drew Aller looks pretty damn good, and I'm excited to see him play on Sunday, although hopefully he loses. But like, there's the other part of the prototypical quarterback, which is Tom Brady. Like, it's so funny, man. Like, Tom Brady, the thing that annoyed me most about Tom Brady was he said nothing, he stood for nothing, and he had the personality of avocado toast. But I think that's why teams wanted him. Like, I'll be honest with you guys, I think Baker's personality is a big reason why Baker's not here anymore. I think it had as much to do with the ceiling of Baker as everybody wants it to be. Now, I'm saying it was a part of it, but I think the bigger part was Baker was his own guy, and Baker said things in a way that made organizations comfortable, especially for two Ivy League guys who really like bland and generic.
One more time, sorry, that last part.
I think where it became untenable with Deshaun, I think the personality stuff really started to come in because the football didn't outweigh the personality stuff. He was aloof. There was a lot of weird miscommunication stuff. He didn't seem to be the life of the party, the guy who everybody kind of gravitated to previously. Jameis isn't the prototypical quarterback when he steps in front of a microphone either. And again, you and I might like that, depending on if he's winning. Teams tend to not love it. And so whether this is fair or not, when you have a personality that doesn't check all the boxes or doesn't fit nicely into what NFL teams want, and I think, guys, I think specifically what this NFL teams want, I think they want avocado toast personality at quarterback. I think they want the guy that says nothing, stands for nothing, and just is a cliche machine. Because that's what the head coach is. Andrew's a little more forthcoming and is a little more willing to say things, but it's not like Andrew Berry's out here whipping out hot takes or, you know, speaking ever out of place on any single topic. And I think that's going to be tested in the next 8 or 9 games. So pretty much like everything else, guys, there is some correlation of, well, how good are you? And you have to be good enough to substantiate any of the BS or blowback or the conversation points they don't want to talk about. That makes the math with Jameis even more interesting because he is a turnover waiting to happen at any given point. And as I've made the point previously, what made Joe work last year, because I'm going to continue to go back to Jameis versus Joe, is that Joe turned the ball over, but when he turned the ball over mattered. It wasn't until the Houston game that he had that kind of death knell turnovers, right? Jameis had like 2 in that Baltimore game. They just weren't caught. The obvious one was the Kyle Hamilton one. Do I know definitively that Jameis will or won't be the future quarterback? No, I would lean against it. There's a lot of things. The personality is part of it, but I tend to think the more Jameis plays, the more those turnovers are going to happen, much like Joe Flacco. But at the same point, I'm open-minded to it. But I think if you just put it on 2 turnovers or less in every game and 2 touchdowns or more in every game, that's the path to Jameis being the starter here the rest of the season and then into next season or not, I think we're missing a big part of what teams and specifically this team want. So yes, getting back to it, I would not bet on Jameis having a turnover-free game of 300-plus yards on Sunday. I think he can do one of those things pretty easily. But this is a much better defense. And this has not been, that Baltimore guy is not who Jameis has been most of his career. And I think to make sure that Jameis gets multiple more starts after this, I think he needs to be as close to the Baltimore performance as possible. 216-474-0092. Would you bet on Jameis repeating his Baltimore performance on Sunday against the Chargers? We'll get more into Jameis later on the show, but Yankees fans are mad because they're like everyone else now. You hate to see it. 92.3 The Fan.